each individual cell can have up to 10,000 connections, and those can be from 1,000 different neurons from very, very distal parts of the brain. So any one neuron can have connections with
thousands.
So can have indirect connection then with neurons
yes.
that are very far separated
yes.
in the brain.
Oh, yes. In addition, a neuron can make a connection back on itself to tell itself what it just learned. So that can come back into the next piece of information.
Each of the one cell has 10,000 can have 10,000 connections. Each of these can have 10,000 connections, and the time is very fast. Yeah. So, in
Absolutely.
Fact, everything can be.
That better, Shashana. And that cell jig, the summer was in drought, was chewing or that. The cell jig, the masana, and she had the function of tomorrow.
So, given this very deeply interconnected sort of reality of the cell world, cellular world. So if it is connected to so many other cells, what happens if that cell gets damaged or dies?
Yeah.
Will that affect the whole system?
So this is what's very important in mammals, in mature mammals. We have what's called redundancy. So there's many, 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 many cells. So we have a buffer of cells within a circuit, and it also depends if you have many cells, some portion cells that are killed all at one time, versus those that are slowly lost. Like with aging, with aging, we can adapt to the slow loss of cells that occur with aging. But if that same number of cells are lost instantly, it would have a bigger impact on us than if we were able to adapt to the slow loss that happens. But in insects, in small animals, they don't have redundancy. They have, in many cases, and that, therefore, if a cell is lost in the brain of an insect, you can lose an entire function. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a mammal, you have redundancies, and we believe this has to do with longevity, because the short-lived insect has less of the challenges of trying to live for 100 years that we live. But I think this is right that we're getting to the complexity, because when you think about the fact that the brain is responsible for our ability to communicate and discuss with everybody here and then somehow remember what we are talking about enough so we can ask the next question, certainly would require this level of complexity to be able to do that, we believe. This was just, I think you've already gotten the point, in that was an idealized neuron previously, and these were just different shapes of neurons that exist in different parts of the brain. And they have, each of them have different functions and different numbers of connections that are specific for what they have to do and how well they're connected. But I think we got that point from the other ones. Now, I wanted to say a few more words about the connections themselves, because I think the connection between two cells is really where the information is being transmitted. And you're correct in saying the calculation is important, but that point at which communication is being made is critical. And these are, again, the antenna or the dendrites, and these now are axons from another cell making a contact on that dendrite, and that is called a synapse. And this is what they look like in real life, in a micrograph, an electron micrograph at 36,000 power magnification. So this is the receiving side. So this is the receiver, and this is the sender of information. And these little packets, we're actually seeing real packets of information here that release a chemical across there, which is what is how communication is transmitted in the brain, by the release of packets of information. And then this one spine here, I'm having trouble with this, brings that information into the cell body for the calculation event. So how these connections are made, and here's a, this is a real live dendrite, and these are what we can now see of as live receiving points. And I'm going to use the word spine, and the spine is the point where a connection is made and the chemical is released. And that's, a, for us, is becoming more of an important point, because this is how connections are made from one cell to another, is through these spines. And they have all sorts of wonderful shapes. And now we're beginning to understand that the shape has something to do with its...
Excuse me, Rusty, am I right in thinking that the synaptic connection, the one is the end of the dendrite, and the other one is the axon?
That's right.
Okay.
So this is the dendrite. This is the connection on the dendrite, and this is the synapse, or the presynaptic point from the axon,
okay,
that's releasing the chemical.
So the axon transmits and the dendrite receives.
Exactly. Exactly. Good.
And
this is what the little connector points look like in reality, at various shapes of maturation. And this one is particularly interesting because it's long and thin, and that's what occurs with infants. When they're young, they're thin, and they reach out, and they move out, and they look for ways to make connections. But they're gone in adult. Most of those no longer exist. You don't have this immature youth moving out, we thought before. Okay. So levels of plasticity, the name of this conference is neuroplasticity, but we think of levels of plasticity. When we began to think about plasticity or adaptability, how to adapt, one idea was at the level of connections between cells, one type of plasticity would be that the connection gets stronger so that the information is more reliable or it's more efficient. And that was okay, because that's when we thought that there were no changes that occur. It's just one gets stronger. Then we began to learn that you can disconnect and reconnect to another part, or you can make more connections. This is another level of plasticity, of now structural plasticity, so you can have increases and decreases in the total number of connections in neurons. And this was a progression of thought that only emerged in the last decade. And the third level, most complex, is that you actually add a complete new neuron with 10,000 new connections and thousands of new outputs. And you can understand how it was hard for scientists to believe that this could actually happen, because it added too much disruption into the circuit. But now we know that in some very limited areas of the brain, new neurons are being made all the time. But new synapses or new connections are being formed in the brain all the time in many areas of the brain. So I want to talk a little bit about more details of this. The one structure of the brain that I'd like to focus on that Richie already talked about is this brain structure called the hippocampus. And first I'm going to say that it was a surprise that to discover that there are cells in the brain that are dividing all the time, that are becoming two, from one to two, two to four, four to eight. This was a surprise because we thought the brain was stagnant. But more of a surprise, in this one brain area here, so this is a section through what we call the hippocampus, in this one part of it, this is an expansion of that area, there are these little baby cells that are dividing, and over time, they mature and migrate into the circuitry and become a full-blown adult neuron with new connections. And this is occurring throughout life all the time. And what I'll tell you about is it's not static. It's actually regulated, the rate at which these cells are coming into the brain.
How long did it stay for them to bifurcate?
From the time that they're born, that means the first division, to the time that they actually, to the time that they actually make these connections, at a minimum, is 1 month. So the cell does not have the ability.
Is that in adults as well as children?
In children, it happens faster. But in the adult, the rate is on the average a month before it can make a calculation. Before a month, it has physical structure, but it can't make calculations.
This graph of new neurons.
So this question is,
since